For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
All right, so today what I want to share is a very fundamental contradiction that we find in really a statement that Chazal make, the Darshaning Pasuk regarding Kabbalah Satar. This is Parshat Yisro, Kabbalah Satar, one of the most fundamental issue that we have to deal with in all of Torah. This is where it all starts, where it all begins, as far as a Kahal. And Chazal have a drasha, which you're all familiar with, which completely seems to go against the grain of what the Pesukim tell us as how the event works. And that has to do with the concept of Nasa V'Nishma. Nasa V'Nishma is the banner of the Jewish people. Chazal described it as when Klal Yisrael was Makdim Nasa, will do, before they said what's in it. The Malachim came down from Shemayim and crowned Klal Yisrael with two separate crowns. It's the famous Medrash which we hear every year Shavuos time, that before Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, he went to all the nations of the world and they all said what's in it, and then each one would hear something which goes against their grain and they said we don't want it. But the Klal Yisrael, they right away said, we're in Nasa V'Nishma, and you can follow that all the way till modern day writers. Rav Hirsch has a whole long beautiful piece describing how that is, how a Jew lives his life. I'm in, and now I question, now I ask, now I learn, now I study, now I understand, but it's always in the context of, nah, I'll do, and then let's learn, let's understand. But it's the banner of the Jewish people. Nasa V'Nishma, it's part of our liturgy. Many of the Zmiros will refer throughout Shabbos to the concept of Nasa V'Nishma. And all is fine and dandy, and you are familiar with that concept. There's another drasha you're familiar with, which seems to fly in the face of that. And that is, you don't have it in front of you because the Maral discusses it for such great length that I couldn't photocopy the entire parsha to give it to you. But on the third day, the Torah describes, Vayi bayom ha-shlishi bayos ha-voker. Third day, Klal Yisrael is getting ready to accept the Torah. There are kolos, uvrakim va'anon, kaved al-hahar, the thunder, the lightning, the thick cloud, the sound of the shofar is heard, vayecharad kolam, everybody is trembling. Moshe vayotze Moshe asam lekros alokim. And Moshe then gathers the people to greet Hashem. Vayisyatzvu betachtis hahar. And they gather betachtis hahar. What does it mean that they gathered betachtis hahar? So Rashi says it means tachas hahar, the foot of the mountain. Al pipshuto, all the people are getting ready to receive the Torah, and they gather literally at the foot of the mountain. And then Rashi says, "Umedrasho," but the Medrash, the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos darshins, "Betachtisar tachas" has a lot of different meanings. It can mean at the bottom of, it can mean at the foot of, it can mean underneath. So the Gemara darshins "Betachtisahar" that the Jewish people were gathered literally underneath the har. Rashi's language is that the mountain was lifted up from its place. Rashi's language, I'll read it to you. Shenitla shahar mimakomo, the mountain was uprooted from its place, v'nichba aleihem kegigis, and held over them like a barrel or like a funnel of some sort, held over their head. Rashi's quoting from the Gemara in Shabbos, which the Gemara says, imatem tekalu es haTorah, if you'll accept the Torah right now, mutav, everything will be great. V'imlav, sham tehek v'rasam, that's where your burial place will be, I'm just going to drop the mountain on your head. Rashi quotes this in Chumash, it's Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, based on the words betachtis hahar. So far so good? Not really. That should be a problem. Problem is as follows. The Pesukim give us one approach. If you read the Pesukim, you would say, what did Kabbalah Satar look like? And look great. Klal Yisrael, they were in. Nasa V'Nishma. They accepted it, Beratzon, they won it. And it all in. Chazal find the drasha in the language of Betachtis Sahar, could have just meant at the foot of the mountain. Chazal see the complete opposite as to what was going on. It was coercion. It was coercion at the threat of death. It was, you're not going to live without this. You will all die if you don't accept the Torah. This is the problem that today's Maral is going to address. This is a massive problem. It gets to the core of what was taking place at the time of Kabbalah Satara, to diametrically opposed impressions, one that the Chumash itself gives us, one that Chazal gives us, as to what was taking place. not my question. I'm sure you've heard this question before. Maybe you haven't. Sometimes you hear the two things and you take them for granted and you never really stop to think about, well, wait a minute, which one was it? What actually happened there? Was it a Ratzon willing acceptance? Or was it coercion? Were they forced into it? That's today's Maharal. The Maharal starts by quoting Tosus. Tosus asks this question. It's not Maharal's question. It came way before the Maharal. Tosus already asks this question. That's where your underlines begin on Daf Ayin Ches, is where it starts, in the top of that corner. I didn't even photocopy the opening lines of this question, which on the other side is just one line. Hikshu b'Tosvos, halo kvar amru nasa v'nishu. So Tosus on the Gemara there in Shabbos, when it says that the mountain was suspended over their head with a threat of death, Tosus asks, what do you need a threat of death for? They already accepted it. They said, we want it. Lama hotzrochoza, why would we need this? Tirtzu atoifos deshema yuchozun bahem kishiro ha'ish ha'gedola. So Tosus's approach in the Gemara there is that there was a fear that Hashem had that the Jewish people would renege, that they would see the fire and the smoke and all of the to-do with Kabbalah Satorah, Shiyotzasah Nishmasam. The Gemara, in fact, goes so far as to say their souls literally left their bodies, and there was a requirement of Tchiyas HaMeitzim right there on the spot. So Tosa says, maybe that's why there needed to be coercion, that if it had only been left to the Nasa of Nishma, so then they would have backed out of it. So they needed this additional element of the coercion in order to go through with it. The Maharal says, I don't understand that at all. How can you say that there wasn't enough in Nasa of Nishma? Nasa of Nishma is our banner until this day, he writes. The S'chus is, he uses the language, Dore Doros. We use the schus of Nasev and Ishmael. So to say that the Gemara felt that it wasn't enough and that there needed to be coercion, where did Chazal see that? Psukim don't say that. Where does that such a drasha come from against the Nasev and Ishmael? So the Maral tries to explain Tosus, but he doesn't like that approach, and I use that only as an introduction. The Maral is going to come with an understanding as to how and why these two things come simultaneously, and more than being some esoteric explanation, I think what we'll find is how this applies literally all the time in our daily lives, how the Maral is going to connect these two concepts of Klal Yisrael's Nasev and Ishma and the Ribbono Shel'Olam holding a mountain over their head and forcing them with complete coercion, you must accept this. Here we go. So far, is there any question? Any questions on the question? No? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to start from the second paragraph there on Ayin Chas. Aval ha'ikra ha'perish asher nireh poshet. I always love it when the Maral is going to give us something quite complicated and say, Nira Pashut, it seems obvious and simple that this was the only way to address these two diametrically opposed statements. Ki kipa aleya mahar kegigis, that which the mountain was held over their head. Why? What's the meaning or significance or message of that? Loimar, which the Gemara uses is to say, what the message was, Imlote kablu hatoira shom tehei kvurasim, if you don't accept the Torah, this is where you will die. This will become your burial ground. Lomar, the message, ki haTorah hi hechreches lekablo. The Torah is by force to be accepted, meaning it must be accepted. There is no other option than for the Jewish people to accept the Torah. Techrech. It's not an option. Vimlo yikablo haTorah, shom etehei kvurasam. And if you don't accept it, you'll die. As if to say, and he's going to get back to this in a point, I'll introduce it right now. If I ask you, water, air, chocolate cake, necessary, really good aspects of life. So you say, well, water and air, I have to have them. I can't live without it. Can't survive. The air I breathe, a body without, I can't live. Chocolate cake, really good. Life without the chocolate cake would be a different quality of life. But we're still in a different realm than we're talking about water and air. It just adds a lot to my life. It's an enjoyable part of life. Maybe I can't even imagine life without it, but it's still always going to be categorically different than your water or air, which is what you need for mere existence. Says the Maral, where does Torah fit on that spectrum? The relationship between Torah and the Jewish people. Something like water and air, in which you cannot live without it. Or something like chocolate cake that says, life is totally different without it. It would be a totally less pleasurable, enjoyable, meaningful existence without it. But
I can survive without chocolate cake. Where, or maybe we could even put it better than chocolate cake. Maybe we could make it even, you know, challah or something like that. Imagine having to eat only matzah, never having... Where does Torah fit on that spectrum? Says the Maral, the message of the har suspended over their heads is, Torah's hachreches. You can't live without this. It's the air you breathe, the water you drink. And if you don't want it, you can't survive. You can say, I refuse to breathe today. You can say that, and you will die. You can say, I'm no longer taking any liquid. You'll only last for so long before the body will eventually dehydrate. You can't live. You have to have food, water, air. Says the Maral, that's the meaning. Klal Yisrael looks up and they see a mountain suspended over their head, and the message is, you must. You can't live without this. V'yadua, he continues. There are going to be two parts to this, Maral, so we'll finish the first part. We can talk about it, see any questions we have, and then we'll do the second part. V'yadua, ki dvarim hamuchrachim lihios, things which have to be, our water, air example, heim chashuvim b'maylo yoser. It's much more significant. It has a greater significance. It's chashuv. She'i yasher mibaladam. You can't live without it. Something which you can't live without it, so then... you have to have it. It's more chashuv. Ve'in kiyum l'nimtzav as well. V'kach, kipa alei mahar ki gigis lehodiyah maila satora. The message is, Klal Yisrael has to know the significance, the maila of Torah, she'i efshar mi balado klal, that you cannot live without it at all. Vim lo hoya oise ze, hoyu omrim, ki ha-Torah ein hechreches li'olam. Without this, we would have said, it doesn't have to be a Torah in the world. Rak birotzon kiblu aleihem. V'im lo kiblu, lo hayu trichin. What would Kabbalah Satorah have looked like if it was only Klal Yisrael saying Nasa v'nishma? It would have looked like we would have then from that point on said, we willingly chose this, we wanted it, we took it. And if we wouldn't have wanted it, there wouldn't be a Torah in the world. Okay, it was our choice. It benefited us. We looked at it and we said, like it. Message is, it's not that way. It's not that you chose it. It's not that you said, I looked around and I said, what would my life be like without Shabbos? I would never see my kids. We would never have a conversation. They would always be texting. This life is so much better. It's so nice to have a day a week. It's so nice to have a yontif. Okay, it's hard, but you know what? We looked at the big picture and we said, it's better. We took it. We wanted to have a relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam, so we did it. However they would have said it, on whatever spiritual level they would have said it, but it would have come from, we want this, we liked it, and we chose it. Says the Maral, the message to Klal Yisrael is, don't for a minute think that this exists, and that you have it, because you chose it. You can't live without it. It's the classic of Yakiva's fish out of water example. You can't exist. And therefore, there's this mountaintop suspended over your head to say, if you don't take it, the air you breathe. Klal Yisrael doesn't exist without Torah. Maral continues, he brings the drasha that Rashi quotes in the beginning of Chumash, Vayevoka Yom Hashishi. There's an extra hey, the only one of the days, Yom Revi, Yom Chamishi, Yom Hashishi. What's the hey there? So Rashi quotes, it's Malame that there was a Tanai on the sixth day. What was the sixth day as opposed to just day six? The sixth day is the sixth day of Sivan, the day that the Torah was given. That there was a Tanai that Hashem made with Maisa Bracious, that I'm creating you, I'm doing all of this work now, but it's all waiting to see that on the sixth day, Klal Yisrael accepts my Torah. Because if they don't accept my Torah, then I'm returning the whole place to Tohu Vavo. There's no purpose in creation. No purpose in a world without having Torah, and therefore the whole world exists only for that. And Rashi quotes that drasha. There are other drashas of similar nature. And the message of the mountain suspended over their head is such that says, you need this and that you can't exist without it. So far, so good. Right now the Maral is addressing the two Maimarim. We have the Pasuk saying Nasa v'Nishma. We're going to see another Maimar Chazal, which he's going to address in a second on that side. Then we have the mountain over their head. They seem to be contradictory. So he's explaining the two components. So we're going to get you. Your question is correct, fair, and on point. We're just not ready for it yet. So the message of the mountain is, you can't live without this.
So they couldn't live without it as Klal Yisrael? What if there was just no Klal Yisrael? Or does the world need Klal Yisrael to exist with the Torah?
Fair point. From Chazal that Rashi quotes is that the world needs... I guess I would avoid your question by saying like this. The world needs a Klal Yisrael with the Torah. So that I'll put that all together. If you didn't have a Klal Yisrael with the Torah, there wouldn't be a world.
Okay.
I'll say it like that without breaking it down into which part it is. But as a component, that's what we find. That's what Rashi quotes in the beginning of Chumash, also from a Gemara. And that's what the Gemara says. It was the message that the Jewish people receive when they look up and they see the mountain over their head, is that Torah is not chocolate cake. It's not something that we can say, I'd rather a life with chocolate cake than a life without chocolate. I would. And they all took a vote, and they said, it's really good. We're in. Not chocolate cake. It's not something you voted for. It's not something you chose. It's something you can't live without. That's the message of the mountain being suspended over their head. Yeah? So far, so good? Okay. Phase two. The fact that the nature of Torah, the milah of Torah, is such that it's something you can't live without, creates a problem. And that's your Bechira problem. At the end of the day, the way Chazal paint the picture of how Kabbalah the Torah went, Klal Yisrael looks up, and what's over their head? A mountain. So when they accept the Torah, they're doing it in a coerced way, or they're doing it willingly? At the end of the day, Chazal paint a picture of coercion. At the end of the day, Hashem says to them, you'll die otherwise. Okay, I'm in. That's what happens. According to Chazal, whether or not literally the mountain was over the head, or figuratively speaking the mountain was over the head, either way, the message was clear: you don't accept this, you will not survive till tomorrow. So they said, okay, we'll take it. So that creates a problem. Once you're coerced into something, what's your relationship to it? That's something I was forced into do. That's what took place. So the Gemara itself raises this problem. The Gemara says, wait a minute, right after quoting this drasha, the Gemara Masechet Shabbos says, Amar Rava, and this is the underlying part on the end, on the Ayin test, Filo Hachikam Rava, Mikan Modo'o Rava Lo'oraisa. This creates a great excuse when it comes to Torah. Klal Yisrael has an excuse. Says Rava, this is a great excuse for Torah. We have a great excuse. Rashi's language, I underline on the bottom, number 251. Modo Rabba Shem Yazminim Ladin. If we're ever invited to a judgment, which we will be after 120 years, Lo Malo Kiyam Temashi Kibal Tocham Aleichem. Why didn't you accepted it? Why didn't you keep up your word? Yeshlem Tshuva Shekiblu Bonus. We'll have an answer. What do you mean, why didn't I keep it? You forced me into it. I didn't want it. I didn't have a choice. I know Bechira. I was going to die. So I did it. So the Gemara asks this question. Once you introduce this concept of a mountain over their head, you introduce the concept of you're forced into it, I don't have to do this. I was forced into it. So the Gemara is going to explain the Gemara's answer. The Gemara responds to this. The Gemara says, maybe you've heard of this Purim time. The Gemara says, V'kamar, the answer to the Gemara's problem is, Hoder kiblu aleihem bimei Achashverosh. During the time of Purim, in the days of Achashverosh, which is after the first Chorban, before the second Chorban, which is now 1,000 years after, easy, after the original Kabbalah HaTorah, the Jewish people again accepted the Torah, the Chsiv Kiyemu V'Kiblu, as the Megillah writes, Gemara Darshan's Kiyemu, they accepted Masha Kiblu Kvar, what they had already once accepted upon themselves. So that the question of, well, now that you're forced, I don't have to do this, because I was only forced into it in the first place, so that's remedied by the fact that Purim time, the Jewish people indeed accepted the Torah again willingly.
Well, what about the time between?
Excellent question. Hang on to that question. I'm probably not really going to get to it, but we'll ask that and then we'll address it. I think we will actually be able to address it. Perish. What does it mean, first of all? Show you mekavim aleihem mitzvah achas mi mitzvah satorah. They now added a new mitzvah from the mitzvah satorah, one that didn't exist, the mikros kriyas megillah. They forgot the ain kan ones. Here you don't have any ones. No one was forcing them to accept the Megillah reading. The hema atzmam kiblu, then they did it on their own. The kevan the hema atzmam hiskimu la'asos mitzvazos. Once they on their own took something upon themselves, zehu kabbalas kol haTorah. That becomes like a mikabel the entire Torah on their own. As an example of what that means, in other words, if you didn't buy the whole package, you wouldn't then add more things to it. The fact that they now willingly took on new things is indicative of the fact that they're accepting the whole thing on themselves. As an example, let's say I have a field, and my field, this is my field, is surrounded by four other fields, and it's all open. And the owner of this field over here decides to put up a wall, because he's enclosing his field. So he puts the wall, now the wall borders my field. Do I have to pay him for half of the labor and the cost of that wall? What would you say?
No.
No, how should I? I don't get any benefit from it, and I didn't ask him for it. Well, what happens if a week later, this neighbor sees, wow, that guy put up a field, that's nice, all those fences. And he does the same, and he puts fences all around his field, including bordering my field over here. Do I have to pay him for the cost of labor of that field? No, I don't have to pay him for that either. Well, what happens when my third neighbor does the same thing now also? And now I have three walls, and I haven't asked them for any of them. So I don't have to pay them for any of them. What happens if I put up a fourth wall here now?
Now you're getting benefit from
this. Says the Gemara, you put up the fourth wall, now you have to pay your other three neighbors for the cost of their work. Because when you put up that fourth wall, now you say, I'm interested and I want everything that you did also. So now I have to pay them for it. You don't put up the fourth wall, or somebody, or this neighbor does. That's a separate story. I happen to be the beneficiary, but I didn't ask for any of this, and I haven't revealed any of my benefit to that. I put up the fourth wall. Now I'm saying I'm into all of this. So as an example of that, so the Maral says he's explaining the Gemara. The Gemara says we took Mikra Megillah when we took upon ourselves to do a new mitzvah. It's as if we're accepting everything else that came before us. We're all into this. And look, we're even doing more things than we needed. So when we added that new element, so then there's this willing acceptance that refers back to what had originally been there, which seems to have been covered up by the har standing over their head, making it completely coercion, completely coerced action. But you see, Klai Yisrael will eventually accept it on their own. Why is that element? This is going to be now part two, says Morel. Yeah, part one was there's coercion. Why was there coercion? Because we have to understand the Milah Satorah. We have to understand the significance of the relationship to the Jewish people to Torah, and that you can't live without it. There's a problem with that, in that if there's coercion, so then I don't have to do this. So the Gemara says, we re-accepted it. Now, what we're not going to do this morning is go through that particular answer, what we do with the time in between. We're not going to do it. What we're going to focus on is that there are these two elements which both have to be there. There's an element of coercion, which teaches you the Milah Satorah, the significance of it, that it's the air you breathe, it's the water we drink, the food we eat. And then there has to be this Ratzon element. Part two is, why does there have to be this element of the Na'aseh V'Nishma? Whether it appears in the Purim story, it appears originally, where is that simultaneous concept? So the Maral explains as follows from the paragraph beginning, V'im. V'imlo hayazah, what would be if there wasn't any element of Ratzon acceptance? There was an element of a Mikra Megillah bringing us back to the Na'aseh V'Nishma aspect of Kabbalah Sotar. We only had the mountain. Then there would be this great excuse to say, Ki Kabbalah Satorah Behechrech, we were forced into accepting the Torah. Anything that you're forced into is not part of your essence. It's not part of who you are. You don't relate to it as such because you're forced into it. If it was something that you wanted to do willingly, then there's a kesher, there's a connection, there's a pull and attraction to it. Whenever I have to force you into it, it shows that there's no intrinsic connection here. Because we're pulling apart from each other. We're not attracted to each other. You have to force it into it. And as soon as that happens, you're saying it's not the etzem. It can't be, says the Maral, that when it comes to the relationship between Klal Yisrael and Torah, that it's something we're forced into, we don't have any natural connection to. He brings us an analogy that Rav Harman in the footnotes from Eretz Yisrael. In note 250, I have it underlined. Atem b'chisem b'chiyya sholchinom, ani koveh lechem b'chiyya ledor. The Gemara talks about the famous episode of the Meraglim. They come back to spies, and the Jewish people are crying. And Hashem says, you're crying tonight for nothing? I'll make this a night of crying. The Maral explains, Ki kol advarim hativim, mishtoikikim el mikomam hativi. Things that are natural connectors, there's this there's this hashkaka, this shtika, to the makom hativi, to its natural place. There's this draw, there's an attraction. V'im haya ha'aretz l'Yisrael makom tivi, if the land of Eretz Yisrael was to the Jewish people their natural place, v'hayu mishtoikikim el haaretz, and they yearned and desired for it, haya nishar zed nitzchi, they would remain there forever. There just would have been this natural connection that they would have had, and it would have been an eternal connection. Aval haya kan ha'efech, but there was the opposite. Shebachu b'chiyah shel chinam. They cried. It was a worthless, meaningless cry. Unwarranted. The lo rasul of olah. They didn't want to come. L'kach moira zeh she'in ha'aretz makom hativi li'Yisrael. That cry showed or demonstrated that the land and the people were not connected. They didn't have the teshuka, the desire, the yearning for it. That's why they couldn't stay there. That's when there's a relationship between the two. The relationship between Torah, it has to have been that same thing where there's this draw between Klal Yisrael and the Torah. If it's forced into us, then we're never be'etzem connected to it. He brings us an example. The Fikach, top line there in the second paragraph on Daf Pei. And the second column. L'fikachim hayu over matora, if it had only been forced, and Klal Yisrael would be over the halachas of the Torah, yuchlu loyma, they would have said, ki ein ha-Torah roi liyos liYisrael betzel. Like, of course we were over the Torah. It's not natural to us. It doesn't fit. Ki advorim ha-mukhrachim einu be'etzem. Things which are forced onto us are not natural or part of our essence. V'achar sha-Torah einu be'etzem. And once you say the Torah is not natural to them, then kein ein ha-Torah roi liyitzaratzem. It's not right. It's not fit for us. There's nothing new. Of course they were over. Shem ein ha'evan omeid ba'avir. Ein chidush. If a rock doesn't remain suspended in the air. No big deal. Of course not. What's keeping the rock there? I'm holding it. As soon as I let go, what's going to happen to it? So it falls. Says, well, if Klal Yisrael was forced into the Torah, there was analogous to having been picked up by Hashem and held in its place. So you'd say, okay, so as soon as you stop holding on to me, I'm going to fall. You can't blame me for falling. You can't blame me for failing, for not keeping the mitzvahs of the Torah. I was forced into it. The fact that I was forced into it shows that you're holding me. V'pnei she'ein tivul la'amot sham, therefore, he's only standing. Says the Ma'al, therefore, as follows. The two things come together as follows. I'll explain it outside and let's read it inside. On the one hand, we have Ma'ilas HaTorah. The mile of the Torah is such that the message has to be conveyed to the Jewish people. This is the air you breathe. How do I convey that to them? I convey that to them by holding a mountain over their head. And the suspended mountain says, if you don't accept this, you can't live. You'll die. Message being, it's behechrich. It has to. It's the air you breathe. At the same time, we lose something because of that. Because now that I was forced into it, now I have a relationship to the item that I'm being forced into of one of being forced into it. That's the relationship that I have. Which means that you can't blame me if I don't keep it. You can't blame me if I don't want this. Because it's not essence, it's not part of who I am. You forced me into it. Well, I had to force you into it. Not because I had to force you into it, but because I had to let you know that you have no existence without it. So simultaneous to that is Nasa v'Nishma. Simultaneous to that is Klal Yisrael saying, we want this. We know and understand that we want it. Not because we're forced into it, even though we are being forced into it because it's the air we breathe, but that we want it. Because I would choose to have it. Because it's part of who I am. I can't see myself living without this. I'm so connected to it. So that simultaneously two completely opposite factors weigh in on the Jewish people. It would be analogous to, and there's no way to, I couldn't come up with something in our actual lives, it would be analogous to a person saying, I choose to breathe because I want it. So you say, no, you're not doing what you want, it's because you'll die. No. Even if it wouldn't be true that I would die, I'm choosing this because I want it. So that at the same time, I'm doing something that I recognize I would die without, but that I'm choosing to do because I have a connection to it. So that at the same time, says the Maral, there were two perspectives. There was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective in Nisinas HaTorah that says, you need to know there's no existence for Klal Yisrael without this. It's the air you breathe. It's the air you breathe. And then that's coming downward. From Klal Yisrael's perspective, it's Nasa V'Nishma. We're descended from Abram, from Yitzchak, from Yaakov. We have this Nesora. We want this. And I relate to it, we relate to it as something that I'm choosing, that I love, that I want. Not that I'm forced into it, that I want it. Because if I'm forced into it, I have no relationship to it. I want it. And then I'm forced. No, I want it. I'm forced. It's literally together at the same exact time. And you see, in our lives, there's only like a spectrum that like why are you doing this? So there are Jews who would answer that question and would say, this is just, I looked around the world and I saw different lifestyles and I saw what families are like. I have family that's not religious or that's not Jewish. I said, this is what I want. This is what I want for my family. It's just a better lifestyle. So that's coming, that's the perspective of not, I want it. But that's missing half the story. The other half of the story is, you're a fish in water. You might relate to it as I'm actively choosing and I want it, but you can't ever lose sight of you can't breathe without this. And then you have Jews, so you see on the opposite end of the spectrum, who are I have to. Don't you understand? You'll die, and this punishment and that punishment, it's all from, they're living with the mountain over their head. So it's true. Avadim anachnu, we are, but there's, you can't also lose sight of the fact that there's a personal relationship. There's a nasa v'nishma. There's this avinu malkeinu. There's a father and there's an eved. You're a melech. It literally happens simultaneously within our lives that we have to deal with these two diametrically opposed, competing feelings of. The mila of Torah is so great, I can't live without this, on the one hand, and nasa v'nishma of, I want it. I have a relationship. I'm not being forced. I'm not a stone that's being held up by fear that if you would drop that, I would plop to the floor because I have no relationship to this on my own. It's only because I'm being held up by fear. I want this. And in the moment that I say I want it, I'm knowing that I don't have a choice. I want it. I need it. I can't live without it, but I want it. So I'm choosing to know that which, if I didn't choose to do, I would die. And I have to relate to it as both at the same time. I have to relate to it as, you can't live without this. And, you know, Ava Yira. Nural says, that's what Chazal are telling us. If you'd only read the Psukim, you would see the Nasa V'Nishma. Psukim are giving us Klal Yisrael's perspective. Klal Yisrael is giving us, the Torah is telling us, when Klal Yisrael was given the option, they said, Nasa V'Nishma. The other nations of the world were presented, and they said, we don't want it. And Klal Yisrael said, we do. We don't know what it says. We want it. We're in whatever it is we want. And Chazal tell us the drasha that says, don't lose sight of the fact, yeah, of course you want it. But that's only half the story. And it's true, and it's going to stand in our stead, L'dori Doros, as the Malachim came and crowned us, Nasa V'Nishma. But you need to know that at the same time, there's this element of being Omid, B'tachtis Ahar, at the foot of the mountain, in which you also can't live without this. And the two go together. I had a group of sixth graders that come every year at the Galloway School. It's Judaism 101. They ask a bunch of questions, and I try to answer them as best that I can. And, you know, one of the kids asked, the question of kosher always comes up. It's a very high Jewish percentage of kids there. The question of kosher came up. Have you ever eaten non-kosher food? They want to know, because to them, you know, they relate to it just in a different way than we do. And then they ask, do you ever question your religion? It's a very fair question. And certainly in a lot of that's a terminology in a lot of the other religions. Like, you can't question. It's a fair question. Like, do you ever question the religion? So there's this moral, like a drug. On one hand, you say, no, I know and understand I can't live without this. And Nasa V'Nishma says, I'm in, but from my perspective, I chose to be in. And if you suddenly take the first report, it's like, not the first I'm in, and then I question, then I ask, I need to know and understand with being in. But I willingly took it, I was forced into it. The question, like a child isn't, do you feel like you have a choice in this? And the answer is no and yes. The answer, no, I don't have a choice in this, because I would die. I'm a fish out of water. I'm a fish out of water without a life of Torah. And, of course, I have a choice in this. I said, Nasa v'nishma. I'm living off of that. I choose every day. It's new, it's fresh, and I'm in. I'm not all year. Well, that's hard to deal with at the same time. There's nothing really like that in our life. You know what I'm trying to, like going to work, you could say, I really love going to work. Like, I feel like I have to because I can't survive after. But even that's not as difficult, not as analogous, because, you know, you don't die if you don't go to work. It's a little bit farther removed. There are many people who don't work, and they get their sustenance from somebody else. Husbands who work, someone else supports them. It's like hard to find something that says, if you don't breathe, you'll die, and that, no, I'm choosing to do so. Because we've got some set up for us, and all those things, like, we breathe naturally. So eat, you could say, eating the basics. Let's say a person only ate certain foods that they needed to live on, and they could say, I need this, and I'm doing it because I'm choosing to do it. It's just, it's hard to come up with that. And it's like, but in our daily lives, is what we do. As we get ready for Shabbos, and we live through Shabbos, and all the aspects of our life, these two elements are literally simultaneously imposing their will on us of, why are you doing this? Because. There's an element of that. Why do I need to? Because. That's why. Why do I need to eat? Because you'll die if you don't eat. That's why. There's no other answer. And then there's the answer of, you know, I need to understand this. You need to buy into this. You need to say, I'm in. I choose this. I have a relationship with this. I'm not being forced into this. I won't. At the same time that you're still having the back of your head, because. Because you'll die. You're a fish out of water. It's sort of easy to say, it's much harder to understand, and it's really hard to live with. You know, someone last night mentioned, like, a lot of time you look at Baalei Tshuva coming into the fold, so they probably come in different ways. Some would come purely from the Nasa V'Nishma, they come to a Shabbos table, and they say, like, wow, look, a community, and a family, and I want all this. And it's choose, and then at some point, they hit some point in the training where they're like, you really don't have a choice in this matter. And I'm like, wait a minute. Or some people come from the opposite perspective. They're searchers for truth, and they come to the element of, oh, I looked into all these religions, this is truth, I got to do it. And there's this empty, well, where's the Nasa V'Nishma? There's got to be this, it's not just because I have to, there has to be the relationship. There has to be this, I'm in, I want, I choose, because otherwise you're just a rock that's being held. Says the Moral, those are the two perspectives. From a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, Hashem is saying, you have to know the Milas HaTorah, that you can't live without it. The Torah is telling us from Klal Yisrael's perspective, there's an Atta V'Nishma that says, we're in. And the two go together, and the others go together. So there are many approaches to this contradiction. It's not, again, Tosfos already asked the question on the Gemara. I'm sure you've come across it. If you look for it, you'll find many approaches. This is the Moral's approach, that the two are actually simultaneous. The pieces that we didn't get very much into are, you know, the whole Purim element, what happened in between those years, and how does the accepting of Mikra Megillah really a reestablishment? But taking it at face value, so the Mikra Megillah says is a redoing of Nasa V'Nishma, and then the two have to have always been there, the two elements of being forced and the elements of accepting it willingly in order to have all the different elements. Questions, comments? The heavy piece could be postured as the Maral says, but I find it, they're both there, and you have to work through them. Different aspects.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.